Welcome to the James Mellon Podcast. I am Dr. James Mellon, and I am here to help you live your greatest life ever by living life to the fullest. What you're about to hear is one of my Sunday talks from our Celebrations of Love. I hope you enjoy it.
Welcome to a new limited series on the James Mellon Podcast, New Thought, Real Talk. I'm Thor Chalgren. In this new series, we bring you an interview I've done with a minister at Global Truth Center. New episodes drop on Fridays, with the regular episodes with Dr. James continuing on Tuesdays. In this episode of New Thought, Real Talk, I speak with Reverend Dr. Tiffany Milne. Here now is that interview. Enjoy! Dr. Tiffany Milne, welcome to New Thought, Real Talk. How are you today?
I'm doing great. I'm excited to be here and do this with you.
Yeah, me too. I'm so appreciative of you for being on the show today. You are a minister at Global Truth Center, also a successful business person. So I have a lot of questions that I want to talk with you about, and for sure some real talk. So let's start. I'd love to hear what your journey has been like to become a New Thought minister. And here's my question. Would Tiffany in her 20s be surprised that adult Tiffany would have become a minister?
I think everybody in my life in my 20s would have been surprised to find out that I became a New Thought minister, including me. It was not even remotely on my radar. The journey. So I didn't grow up with a lot of religion. On my mom's side, they were Jewish. On my dad's side, they were Christian. And so to stay out of warring factions of family, they just sort of raised us with very little religion at all. And there was always that something in me. I think I was spiritual and maybe like agnostically spiritual, if that's a thing. Mm-hmm. But what started to happen is there was this, like, I can only describe it as like an angst or a hole inside of me that felt like I was trying to fill it with all of these things. And so as I am very type A, very high anxiety. And so as I was sort of climbing the ladder of my career, it'd be like, oh, when I get to this point, then I'm going to feel better. And I never felt better. And then, you know, I did stand-up comedy thinking like, oh, maybe I'm a creative person, and thinking like, you know, applause and accolades from an audience was going to do it. And I was like, oh, that doesn't fill it either. And so I think there was this constant searching for something that was just going to make me feel connected. It almost felt like everybody on the planet got a rule book that wasn't like I was absent that day and I didn't understand how it all worked. And so my journey really started when I had my son. I realized I have two kids, and I realized that a life without any sort of spirituality or faith or tradition or connection, for children, growing up in that environment where they have some sort of a compass or a home base was really important. But I didn't want to go to traditional religion because I felt, well, I never mind on that. Let's just suffice it to say that it didn't. I've always been somebody who questions authority and questions everything. And so the dogma associated with religion, it wasn't something I was really interested in. And so I stumbled across Science of Mind. Actually, I had been in an acting class in my 20s, and the teacher was Science of Mind and would end every class with, "And so it is." And of course, I was in my 20s and oblivious. I didn't know what that meant.
Right.
And I stumbled across Science of Mind, and it was the right balance for me, because they weren't telling me what to think or how to live my life, but they were telling me that I could empower myself and that I was at choice. And so I started out sort of in the back of the room and taking some classes, but not really interested in community or really diving in. I was there so that I could check the box that I raised my kids with some sort of something. And then just slowly my life started to change. And suddenly that hole started to like fill a little bit. As I felt more empowered, the hole started to shrink. And then one class led to another class that led to another class. And I had no intention of being a minister. I was like, absolutely not. That's not what I want to do. But eventually, like, you get to a point where like the next class is ministerial if you want to stay in classes. And so I went through ministerial training. I must have tried to quit a million times because I was like, what am I doing here? I'm a comedian. I'm sarcastic. I am the last person anybody would think would be standing up in a pulpit. But I just kept going and my life kept getting better and better and better. And suddenly I got to a point where it was like my life had been so transformed and had gotten so much better that the next logical step is to let your light shine and figure out how to give that gift to other people and to share that message. And then I got a doctorate because that was the next class that you could take. So looking back, I feel like it was a divine, like there was something in me pulling me forward and that, you know, the Tiffany of today was pulling that 20-year-old Tiffany into this space. But at the time it felt very like, this is crazy, right?
I would assume that story feels like many people's stories were, I don't know too many people who are like, yes, I want to be a practitioner. Yes, I want to become a minister. But I'm assuming along the journey, you could see an improvement in your own life. Like you would have a sense of like, oh, I'm happier, or I'm more successful, or I'm more whatever. Was that sort of what kept you going, was a sense of, hey, this stuff is actually working for me?
For sure. I felt like there was an integration that happened at some point. Like I felt like there were so many different segments of my life where I was like, mom Tiffany and wife Tiffany. And in my job, I was career Tiffany. And then I was secretly taking spiritual classes on the weekends, you know, it was sort of this. And I think that as that integration happened, I started to become more confident in myself. And I started making choices that more aligned with the me that I was coming to know, right? Like I was creating a mental equivalent where who I saw myself and I was very successful. On the outside, I always looked like I had it all together and like I knew what I was doing. And on the inside, I was so riddled with anxiety and so fear-based. And so I was never comfortable in my own skin. And as that started to quiet, I started to really blossom into my most authentic self. And from that place, when you're creating your life from that place, it just gets better and better and better. And I was able to show up in my life in a more as an active participant. I think I always felt like, you know, creativity was something that happened to me, not something that I was actually an active participant in, or that, you know, you were at the mercy of whatever life had to hand to you. So it was your job to sort of make lemons out of lemonade out of whatever lemons got thrown your way. It never really dawned on me that I was creating my experiences. And that was really liberating and empowering for me.
You mentioned when you were talking about maybe an initial impetus of providing some sort of spiritual background for your kids and the idea of a compass, which I love, by the way, like here's a compass for you to figure out your life. As you reflect back on their experience of either being in science of mind or seeing it work for you, what do you think is the most important quality they've gotten out of science of mind?
You know, it's funny because like my son, mostly my son's 15, so he's a teenager and, you know, he knows that, you know, he knows everything and it's not really too super cool to have a mom as a minister. And so I think outwardly he has a tendency to sort of reject it. Like, I don't believe all that, whatever, you know, but you can see it in the way that he lives his life. Like you can see that by bringing him into this teaching and him just this being all he knows. And also like when his tushy's falling off, he'll be like, mom, can you do a spiritual mind treatment for me? So like, you know, my kids are quick to ask for meditation when they're feeling anxiety or feeling anxious, which I feel like is the biggest gift that I can give to them, right? Is knowing that there are tools and that they have the power to own their own domain. But I recognize it really in just how they carry themselves. There's a sense of self that they have. There's a sense of empowerment. You know, my son is on the track team and I see him really standing in his own power as he does that. And I see him navigating his relationships with his peers in a very, he's just a genuinely good kid. Do you know what I mean? Like there's that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And my daughter too, my daughter's 10. There's a sense of agency over their own lives where it's not like I have to if I'm a good girl, then good things are going to happen to me, or any of that dogma. It's just go out and live your most audacious life, and the world is your oyster. My son's like, I'm going to a D1 school. And I'm like, yeah, you are. Yeah. Like, and so it is.
Yeah. And that's a big thing for kids that age, like what, you know, 10 and above, they can often frame their lives in relationship to others. Like, do my friends like me? Am I doing the right thing? So to have that sense of self-possession and feel like I'm comfortable in who I am, that's everything.
Yeah. I mean, I look at them and they don't have the hole that I kind of started out with. Do you know what I mean? And I really do attribute that to this teaching's all they've ever known. So even if they're like, you know, outwardly questioning or rejecting, or, you know, my son told me, he's like, I'm an atheist. And I'm like, so am I, Dylan. I am God and there is no God is the same thing to me. Like, and he was like, wait, we're not going to fight about that? And I was like, no, we're not going to fight about that. Like, it's okay to have your own beliefs and your own autonomy. And in the midst of that, to know who you are and to stand firmly on, there's nothing offensive here. And I love that.
In addition to being a parent, you are also a very successful business person. And one of your ambitions is to bring this sort of philosophy to corporate America, which you obviously think Science of Mind and corporate America has some sort of overlap on a Venn diagram. What do you see as the opportunity there?
You know, it's funny. Do you remember the book, All I Ever Really Needed to Learn, I Learned in Kindergarten, or something like that?
Yes.
And to me, it's like, I equate leadership with often with parenting and with the principles of Science of Mind, because I think fundamentally, the truth is we create all of these systems. It's all made up. It's all man-made, right? The economy is made up. Corporate structures are made up. Stock market's made up. It's all made up by us. And there's nothing wrong with any of it. But fundamentally, everybody wants to be seen, heard, and loved. No matter where you are, that's what people are looking for. And so often we have that, like, at home, or like, you know, with parenting, I am loving and I am engaged and I see you and I hear you. And then we go off to work and we're like, suck it up, be a robot. And the only real currency or the way that we express people's value is through money, right? The higher you rank, the more money you get. The better you do at your job, the more money you get. You get promoted. And so there's sort of this element of not really seeing people for who they are, not really seeing the value that they bring as people, not putting them in roles that are aligned with their talents and their, you know, even the management structure, right? The way that corporations are set up is if you're a great individual contributor and you've been just killing it, the only way to continue to rise in your career is to become a manager and to go on the manager track. But just because you're great at being an individual contributor does not mean that you have the skills or talents to be a manager. Like, management is really, and leadership, kind of a calling, right? You have to care about other people. You have to be as invested in their career as you are in yours and all of those things. And so we've sort of created this system where everybody's got imposter syndrome. Nobody knows what they're doing. Everybody feels like they have to pretend like they know what they're doing. And really, everybody just wants to be validated and motivated in their own way. Money is great. If my company stopped paying me, I'd stop showing up, right? Like, I really enjoy and expect to be paid. But it's not what gets me out of bed in the morning. And what I discovered is through these principles of recognizing who people are and recognizing what actually motivates them and being invested in their careers and empowering them, that my teams were infinitely more successful than they had been before, when I was just sort of checking my spirituality at the door when I walked into the building. I also think that the more integrated I became, the more I couldn't just check anything at the door, right? I bring my business sense often to parenting. I bring my parenting to certainly leading a team or running a business, right? And so I just think that when I started to integrate these principles, my business became more successful.
I don't know why I'm reminded of the TV show Severance.
Love, do you that know show, that? Yeah.
So severance is essentially they make an agreement to leave their whole personality at the door when they come to work, and now they're just there to do their job and have no recollection of who they are on the outside, which it's a brilliant sort of metaphor that's unfortunately kind of true in
many
ways.
Well, and it really is. You know, a lot of companies, it's funny, I used to joke that one of the companies I worked for, my CEO loved seeing the picture of my children on my desk, as long as they didn't in any way interfere with what I was supposed to be doing Monday through Friday, you know, from 9 to 5. Mm-hmm. And so there really was this sort of disconnect between my real life, my authentic life. And quite honestly, we spend the majority of our time at work. I mean, the reality is that, mm-hmm. I've never had a job that was just a straight 40-hour-a-week work week. But if you figure you're sleeping for 40 hours and you're working for 40 hours, and I think I did the math at some point, you're sleeping for like 36 hours a week or something like that. There's not a lot of time left to be your most authentic self if you're checking it at the door.
Yeah.
But I think that's how most of us operate. I mean, I remember even it took me a really long time to realize that it was like, okay, if I had to use the restroom to like stop working and go to the restroom, I would just sit there and, you know, or be thirsty or hungry and just keep cranking out work and not, and just ignoring my own human needs, which is crazy. That's crazy. Mm-hmm.
Let's move into the real talk section now. So this is where we deal with the kind of real questions that come up. And, you know, we often will joke about this, that in any Science of Mind class where maybe someone comes in and they're exploring these ideas for the first time, they have a lot of questions about like, well, if that's true, then explain this. So one of the most obvious ones is this idea that we will say that everything is unfolding perfectly, some version of that. And then people will always say, well, what about Hitler, or what about, you know, whatever. So this comes up so often. How do we see these things happening and maybe look around in our present world and we go, well, I don't want that. So how can things be unfolding perfectly? How do you reconcile the two of those?
I think it's twofold. I think the first thing is that I can choose to look at the atrocity, or I can choose to look at the beauty that comes out on the other side of the atrocity. So, you know, I look at something like September 11th, clearly awful, bad. And mm-hmm. yet what I saw afterwards was a country that came together. I saw the blood banks having to turn people away because they had, for the first time ever, had a surplus. I saw people, first responders, going, volunteering on their time off. I was traveling on a train from New York to DC about a few weeks after September 11th. And there was a firefighter on the train with me that was leaving Ground Zero who had volunteered her time. She just felt called to go. And so I see those as opportunities that also bring out the best in what we have to offer and really connecting with our most authentic, truthful selves. And so I don't want to discredit, not that I think that we need to have travesty to have the beauty or to see the beauty, but the beauty exists in it. And what do I want to focus on? And who do I want to be? Do I want to be somebody who is expressing the light in a time of darkness? Or do I want to be somebody who is fixated and focused on the darkness? Because I think focusing on the light has the ability to change things and make the world a better place. And focusing on the dark has the ability to create more dark and to create more of that. So I think that's an important component.
Yeah.
But I think the other component is that we as humans assign good and bad. We decide this happens, this is clearly bad. This happens, this is clearly good. And when I think about expansion and evolution and everything unfolding perfectly for our highest and best, it doesn't necessarily mean that I like everything that's happening or that in the moment I can see it. And sometimes the answer is, I don't know why things happen. I'm not, you know, I haven't rise to a level where I understand perfectly each and everything that's happened. But when I can take that step back and recognize that for whatever reason, we are at a time right now where this is part of our evolutionary process, and then recognize what energy am I contributing to it? You know, I look at the landscape of our lives right now, and it's so easy, you know, to get caught up in us versus them and making somebody the other. Mm-hmm. And that's divisive energy that is creating more of the same. If we're creating and we're at choice, the truth is we have to take a look at, we're creating this energy of us versus them and the other and good guy, bad guy. And so if I want to stop creating that in the world, then I have to stop creating it in my own life. So I don't get to, you know, mm-hmm. have torn relationships with my own family members or be crappy to people on the street and think that that's not impacting the global experience that we're all having.
Another thing that we hear is a phrase that's common is this idea that the relative is the absolute at the level of the relative. So the absolute is truth. It's pure consciousness. But then there's also the relative. There's someone who is living on the street, someone who, you know, drug abuser. So how can we say that that person is that, you know, absolute? They're just living, they're choosing to live there. How do we reconcile that, do you think?
I think that, first of all, recognizing, and it sounds cliche and it sounds so cheesy, that everything is God and everyone is God. Like that I have no greater value standing here right now than I did at 20-year-old me who didn't know who I was, or some future version of myself that is even greater, has greater enlightenment than who I stand here today. That I am that God energy no matter where I stand. I also think that there's an element of sort of the soul's evolution, and it goes back to life unfolding perfectly, where, you know, when I look back on the Tiffany of my 20s and the experiences and the level of life that I was living, I had teen parents that were, you know, and there was addiction in my family and there was a lot going on. Like, and I also recognize that all of that, I would not be Reverend Dr. Tiffany had I not had the experience of growing up in that household. I look at my parents and their evolution and who they became through the adversity of overcoming what they overcame. And so I kind of look at it as if I had paved the road of just, you know, divine ease from the get-go, would I be seeking to know myself greater? Would I be questioning and have interest in the quantum field and how we're all connected? Or would I just be super stoked living my, you know, life, making tons of money and, you know, and not really looking at it? So do I think we need to struggle in order to be connected to the truth of who we are? No, I don't. I don't think it's a requirement, but I don't know that we know that. And so I look at the, you know, drug addict on the street and the God that they are and think, gosh, what an opportunity for you to not only recognize who you are and be a story of that divine path of true empowerment and recognition of who you are, and then a messenger for those that don't yet know who they are. I think that a big part of what I do in ministry is all about letting your own light shine so that other people can let theirs shine too, right? And so when I've had these experiences and I can say, I was that, I had this hole, I didn't know who I was, I too grew up in adversity, and look where I am now. It's like, oh, I can be a beacon of light for somebody else to step up into the God energy that they know. So I don't know. I know that's a kind of a long way to
No, that's good. And I think also part of that question that comes up with people sometimes is they're like, well, I didn't choose that. Like, I didn't choose to be homeless on the street. And I'm sort of paraphrasing this, but in my conversation with Dr. Eric Overholtzer, I think he drew a distinction that maybe you didn't choose it in the preceding immediate moment, but there may be some point in your life where you made a choice that led you down that path. And then that sort of choice evolved into where you are now. So maybe that's a way that we can look at this, is not that you chose to have this clearly terrible thing, but there was potentially some point where you did make a choice when you were conscious and able to make a choice that played out the way it did.
You know, it's interesting because I've heard people in this teaching talk about, like, that we come into this life with some agreement or that, you know, sacred contracts or whatever. And I've always thought that that's total BS. I'm like, I don't remember signing anything. Right. I don't remember anything from before this. So please don't try to tell me I signed a sacred contract that I know nothing about. And so, and actually when I sat in on your advanced consciousness class and they were talking about sort of the hands that you're dealt before you get here. And that conversation came up of like, I didn't sign up to have teen parents and one with drug addiction. Like I didn't sign up for that. And my natural inclination is to, you know, be a contrarian and be like, and I was like, what if it's not that I signed up for the specifics of my life, that I didn't sign up for, you know, these to be, you know, somebody to be a drug addict or specifically these parents. But what if what I have signed, what my soul's journey is to learn to love more or to, or self-love or to expand into really knowing who I am in a greater way, then the life experiences that I have would be in alignment with that trajectory of learning that. And that I could sort of get behind. I recognize like for me in this lifetime, learning to love more fully and authentically and expanding that love is definitely the lesson, one of the biggest lessons I'm here to learn. And I know that because I was very closed off for the first 20 plus years of my life. And only when I had my son did I go, oh my God, that's what love is. Like and it was almost like scary and overwhelming. And it's been this journey. And so when I look at it, I'm like, oh, well, if that's what is mine to learn, then of course I would have to experience some semblance of the opposite of that to be able to recognize it when it shows up. And again, I don't know that that's what it is, but that I can sort of get behind.
Our spiritual director, Dr. James Mellon, says sort of famously and advanced this idea into the teaching where he says, I am God, you are God, we are all God. And obviously there's some people that feel uncomfortable with that idea. How has your thinking on this idea evolved over time from, you know, when you first heard him talk about that and then you sort of played around with the idea in your mind? What do you take away from that?
Well, that's kind of where it goes to, you know, me considering myself to be an atheist minister, which seems like an oxymoron, but I grew up with most of my life being either agnostic or an atheist and just believing that I never believed that there was a man outside of me granting wish and saying, I like Thor, I'm going to give him everything and Tiffany sucks, I'm going to give her nothing. It never resonated with me. And for a time in my younger years, my family, when I was about 12, got into 12-step and this concept of a higher power. And I could kind of, you know, it was kind of like you could make it what you wanted to make it. And I could kind of get with that a little bit more. But the good news was that when I got to Science of Mind, I didn't really have any, you know, you look at people who grew up devoutly Catholic and they have to sort of overcome the God of their understanding from their youth in order to be able to be open to the ideas of what we have now. And I didn't really have any barriers to what I was learning in Science of Mind because I didn't have a conception. As a matter of fact, I was borderline antagonistic of the idea of God anyway. And so I think that that actually was helpful. And I think where we get confused sometimes is we think like, I am God as an arrogance or that there's nothing else beyond that. And I think when what we're really saying is, there's this amazing quantum field of pure potentiality, pure energy. We are this creative energy and love is this creative energy and all of those things. And I am not part of it. I am all of it in this individualized expression. And so what it means to me is that I get to create my own life, that I'm the master of my own domain and that I have access to something that I can't even fully understand, right? That it is so big and so powerful and so amazing and so dynamic and not a man in the sky that is better than me. And I think we all feel that when you look up at a starlit sky, right? There's the feeling of I am part of something that is so big and magnificent and majestic. And then we go back to our everyday, regularly scheduled lives stuck in traffic and think that that's not part of that big amazingness as well. the idea that I am God and that I get, back to the I am God and there is no God is the exact same thing. For me, I am this energy and I get to create my own life and I get to have agency over it. And I'm not doing it alone because I'm one of all of it. And I am, Thor is God and I get to be in the awe and energy of your amazing energy. And there's just a collective power when we all understand that that's who we are and stop looking for somebody outside of ourselves to blame when things go wrong and to implore to make our lives go right.
Well, last question. Let's say that you are designing a sales campaign for Science of Mind and how to pitch it to people. What would you say is the most important thing you'd want people to know about Science of Mind and the impact it can have on their lives?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think, I have that rebellious nature. And so I think that the recognition that as you empower yourself, you will naturally empower your own life. And that the key to all of it is really understanding how dynamic and amazing you are. Because I think that's the starting point for all of it, right? Is knowing who you are. It's always fundamentally going to come down to knowing who you are and knowing how powerful you are, which is why I love teaching classes. I love inspiring that in people and watching that light go on. And then all of a sudden there's all these synchronicities that start happening in their lives. And you're like, yeah, because you're starting from a different level. That's exactly how that happens. So I would say that's really what we're offering. We're offering agency and empowerment and getting to live the life of your wildest dreams by just understanding your place in this amazing dynamic world that we live in.
Well, let's do our lightning round now. We're going to have a series of quick questions and they can be yes, no, whatever comes to your mind. And we may follow up on one or two of them at the end. So just real quick, I'll jump in with them and give me whatever comes to my mind. So first question. Have you ever manifested a parking spot or first class upgrade using Science of Mind?
Yes, I have. And it was one of those things we always joke about, like, we're the parking spot teaching. You get a parking space. And I really quickly, so I also manifested not getting stuck in traffic leaving the Staples Center, which I don't know if you've ever left the Staples Center. I had only been in Science of Mind for a couple of months. I was very new. I was like taking an introductory class, just trying to understand what it was all about. And my husband and I went to a Pink concert at the Staples Center. And not only did we get amazing parking, and I was like, oh my goodness, this is, but when we left, for some reason, we ended up based on where we were parking, leaving a different way. And none of the Staples Center traffic applied to us. And I was like, oh my God. Like, and I totally, like, I couldn't wait to get to the center that Sunday and just announce from the rooftops that I had not only manifested a parking spot, but I had manifested no traffic.
Yeah. If you could avoid spending 45 minutes getting out of Staples, that truly is a miracle.
That's right. I was like, I am definitely God. I get it.
All right. Second question. What's the most important part of your morning spiritual practice?
Besides coffee.
That answer comes up all the time, by the way.
You know what? Probably the biggest thing that I do more days than not is go outside in nature and go for a walk. Because I think especially before I start a busy work day where I'm going to be diving into things that seem really, really important and are largely part of that ecosystem of it's all made up, I like to start my day aligning myself. It's really hard to forget who I am when you hear the birds chirping and you see the mountains and the sun, and there's that recognition of I'm part of that bigger something. And that's the energy that I want to go into every day with. So I would say, there's great books are great and all that's like, all of that is great, but really just a walk in nature is nature. What does it for me.
Well, speaking of books, what is a TV show, movie, or book that you think perfectly demonstrates Science of Mind principles?
So I love the book, The Power of Decision. I just taught that by Raymond Charles Barker. I feel like that is a big one. But I feel like the question is really like what outside? And you know what the truth is? It all does. it all, every television show that you turn on, you know, I love trash television, like a little bit about me. I think I use so much of my brain, you know, in the world that when I come home and turn on the TV, I just want to like, I love garbage. Like I just
turn on Vanderpump Rules.
I love Vanderpump Rules. I love I'll watch Real Housewives of anything. Like I just love it. But you really get to see it. It's consciousness, right? It is absolutely consciousness. The chaos that they create, you can see them like, oh, you made this choice over here. That's going to bite you in the tushy. You fast forward a few scenes and we're going to get to see that play out based on the decisions that you made. You get to see people living these rich, really lavish lives and understanding that they don't have anything that somebody else that doesn't have that has, and that they had a belief and an understanding and a consciousness that manifested that life. So I actually believe, well, I know that there's probably a more spiritual answer to this of like, I read this book or watched this movie, you know, I'm sure everybody says like The Wizard of Oz, but for me,
right. You always it's all, have it in you, Dorothy.
Yeah. It's all science of mind. It's all as I believe, so I create.
If you weren't a minister or a teacher or a successful business person, what's one career or job you think you'd be great at?
I always, my dream job, the Tiffany of my 20s, my dream job was to be on Saturday Night Live. I went through Second City doing improv and spent my time doing stand-up and all that stuff. And so, yeah, I would definitely be on Saturday Night Live if I wasn't. Would you? Reverend Doctor.
Would you ever like imagine Don Pardo going, and Tiffany, like you'd hear the voice when you were in the credits?
Oh, yeah. I'd write sketches like from the time I was a little kid, like terrible sketches. I mean, they weren't funny, but they were.
Yeah. I love that.
I
had no idea.
Entertaining people is what I just have always wanted to do in some capacity. And so it's interesting that the path led to ministerial, which by the way, is not all that different than being a stand-up comedian. Just with a few less F-bombs. Yeah.
All right. If you could have a New York Times bestseller or have your own show on Netflix, which would you choose?
Probably Netflix. Although I do intend for my book to be a New York Times bestseller. So actually, I don't want to choose. I want both.
Okay, both. That's fair. You're the first person to say both. Everyone has been definitive up to this point. Let's say that you could bring about world peace, but nobody would ever know it was you. Are you okay with that?
Yes, I am okay with that.
And if world peace happened on a Saturday and you were having a dinner party Saturday night and all of your friends were at the party and they're all like, oh my God, how did this happen? This is the most amazing thing. Do you say anything, or are you just kind of like big smile on your face?
You know, I have to tell you, like, it's funny because I'm like, well, that was a very enlightened answer when I was like, yes, I would be fine with it. And then I'm like, I would totally be secretly wanting to tell my friends that I was the one that created World Peace. Like, I'm like, oh, I guess I haven't reached that level of spirituality.
The humble brag of all time, right?
I would be like, I'd probably be like pulling people into the club, like everybody one-on-one being like, don't tell. But I have a world peace. Like I think I would probably accidentally let it slip that I was
all the right. One that manifested. That's fair. That's genuine. I love that. Okay. Speaking of dinner, let's say you could invite one person over for dinner, either Ernest Holmes, Abraham Lincoln, Gandhi, Jesus, or Oprah. Who's coming to dinner at Tiffany's house?
Okay, so definitely Jesus, because it's a toss-up between Jesus and Oprah, if I'm to be honest. However, he is such, I mean, we're still talking about him all these years later, and I think he is so misunderstood. And I look at the Bible and what they sort of turned his life into, and I think having a candid conversation with Jesus about what he actually meant and the life he actually lived, and a conversation about how he feels about what we've turned his life into would be could probably clear some stuff up in our world. I mean, wars are fought over this man and, you know, the Bible and all of that stuff. So maybe we could clear some stuff up. But I also think, that he would probably say, I can't believe you're still talking about me. And you kind of missed the point.
Yeah, that is true. And follow-up question. If the next night you had people over for dinner, would you tell them that the previous night you had Jesus over for dinner or just...
I mean, I'd like to say no, but yes, absolutely. I'm telling everybody that I was hanging. Although they might think I was
just
crazy.
I was talking with Jesus the other night.
I mean, depends on, you know, if I have proof. Like if Jesus and I took a selfie and I could prove to them that I had talked to him, yes. Otherwise, I'd be like, I don't want to be committed. So I might not tell anybody that I had dinner with Jesus.
That's fair. All right. Well, let's move to advice. And Mike, I have a question. Like, what advice would you give a new minister starting now, either maybe at the beginning of their ministerial career or someone who's beginning that process? What do you think, based on your experience, is the number one thing they should keep in mind?
One, I think there's a common misconception that as soon as they give you your, you know, license and you become a reverend, that you're supposed to have it all figured out. And that for me, in so many ways, it was really just my journey had just started. It was really about a commitment to live from these principles. Not that I was never going to forget who I am or not. It took me a long time to find my own authentic voice and to realize that it was okay that I am a little bit irreverent and that I don't come in your classic minister box. And so I would just encourage each of the new ministers, I know there's a ministerial class about to graduate, to lean into who you authentically are, because that's what's going to resonate with people. It's not having the right words or being able to most eloquently answer the Hitler question. It's really going to come down to, do I believe that you are living these principles, that you're living this teaching to the best of your ability? And do you have what I want? Is there an authenticity? Because for me, when I see a minister that's like, God is all there is, and, you know, we're all one. And I'm like, I've driven on the 405 freeway. It looks like anything but oneness. I need you to reconcile that for me. I need to know what you look like on your worst day and how you get to the consciousness of a minister when you wake up in the morning and you don't feel like it's great. I want to know what it looks like to be a minister in the political landscape that we have right now. And that authenticity is what's going to resonate with people. And that authenticity is what's going to empower people to transform their own lives.
Well, looking ahead, what do you see as the future for New Thought communities, spiritual centers? I mean, obviously we went through the pandemic several years ago and that impacted a lot of communities, and we're coming out of that now, and we're finding this new landscape where it's hybrid, it's virtual, it's in person. What do you see as the greatest area of opportunity for New Thought communities?
You know, it's interesting. On the first page of the Science of Mind book, Ernest Holmes says, there'll come a day when science and religion will walk hand in hand. And I believe that we're there, that's really where we're at right now, where everything that we're understanding about quantum physics and religion and spirituality and the way the brain works. And you look at, you know, people like Joe Dispenza that are understanding, it's like science is proving what we just sort of intuitively knew. Like Ernest Holmes was writing a book based on what he intuitively believed about the universe. And then you have Einstein over here talking about, you know, relative, and all of a sudden you're like, oh my, and we're at this point of convergence. For me, I'm much more fascinated and I'm not interested necessarily in converting people who already have a faith or that are already are religious. I think they have their home, they've found it, right? Mm-hmm. For me, what's fascinating is to start having this conversation with the people who are atheists and agnostics and people in the science world. And when you look at where people are going with that, you know, there's a secular way to start having the God conversation. And that for me is very, very interesting. And that's what I want more of. And so when I look at the people taking these Joe Dispenza is taking Science of Mind principles out into the world in a secular way. He's not saying the word God. He's not saying, and yet it's all this. You look at Amit Goswami and his, you know, his ideas about quantum physics. And I'm like, oh, he's talking about the same thing we are. And so I'm excited about all those people that are bringing this teaching into the into the business world, into the corporate world. I think that's how you're going to change the world, first of all, is meeting people where they're at out in the world. And there's so much that can be done when in that space. So that's what I'm most excited about.
I love that. Well, Dr. Tiffany Milne, thank you so much for being on the show today. We'll put your contact info in the show description so people that want to reach out to you and learn more about the work that you're doing in the world can find you there. I so appreciate, love, and respect you. And I'm just so grateful that you were on the show today and loved our conversation.
I couldn't have said it better myself. I feel the same way about you. And thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the James Mellon Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing to the show. That way, you'll be sure to receive every new episode. And if you want to reach out and talk to me, you can always find me at my website, jamesmellon.org. Thanks again, and I will see you next time.